Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. So we've so far worked with the outer offerings and what they represent. Do you have any questions about that? Was it clear enough, all the different parts?
Could you recap them?
First one is water for drinking. Why?
The thirst.
Tanha, T-A-N-H-A in Pali, means thirst, the thirst. You know where you really want something? You're obsessed with somebody, or you want something, or you know, there are three kinds of tanha. And the first kind, usually talked about, is called kama, K-A-M-A, kama tanha. And it's a really interesting one. It's one that's rampant in our world. It's called the desire for a sensual experience. Any sense door. Which includes the mind. It's all the drugs and movies and, you know. Desire for a sensual experience. So you just keep grabbing. Second kind of tanha is called bhava, B-H-A-V-A, bhava tanha. Bhava means being or becoming, B-H-A-V-A, bhava. You've seen that word often in mantra, you see swabhava. Om Shunyata Jnana. No, that's a different one. Om Swabhava Shudo Saradana Swabhava Shudo Om Bhava Bhava. Means being or becoming. Being is its main meaning, but it's sort of like that idea of a being continuing in time. So, you know, for many people, they desire, they thirst for nothing to ever change. Nothing should ever change. You know that one? Mm-hmm. And the third kind is called vibhava tanha. V-I, we's are pronounced like W's. Vibhava, V-I-B-H-A-V-A, Vibhava Tanha. And Vibhava Tanha is, we means the splitting of, the division of, the splitting of. So it's basically translated as the desire for extinction. It's like kind of a low-level depression. Very low and very powerful, ticking away. The desire to not have to be here. You have these three thirsts or desires. That first bowl is recognizing your thirst and giving it a drink. Not letting it run you.
Is it by just acknowledging the fact that
sometimes that is all you need. Often with vibhava tanha, the most important thing for you to do is to say, oh yeah, this is definite desire for extinction. And then say, and I feel this low-level desire or bhava tanha. I don't want anything to change, you know. Whatever it is. Just feel it there, name it, and then feel your own your body, your own sense doors, your own self now in time and space. And say, all right, this is Vibhava Tanha sitting in this room digesting excellent creme caramel. Say, rather than, oh God, I shouldn't feel this way, and desire for extinction of the desire for extinction, and getting into that overreaction, or rushing out to make sure nothing changes, or, you know, instead of allowing the tanha to run you, you turn around and work directly with the tanha. That's the first bowl. That's that first bowl right there. That's the first thing you have to do. You have to bring yourself to be present with the tanha, not chasing after objects to satisfy. You be there. So first one, water for drinking. Why? To cut down the thirst. What does the thirst do? It takes you out of the moment. All those bhavas take you out of being open to what is present, don't they? All those tanhas, sorry. They're all taking you out of the present. And the second bowl is what?
Artful motion.
In particular, what?
The feet.
Particularly
the feet. Why don't you take a sip? And the tanha is temporarily abated, sometimes just by naming it, sometimes that's the sip you need to take. Very powerful thing, naming. Then there is, next, the settling, the being present where you are, and becoming aware of that. Treasuring where you are. Washing off the dust of the past and the future and being where you are. Standing where you are. So that's the next offering. You know that wonderful folk song? I'm all about folk festival this weekend. No. Yesterday, did you hear what we did yesterday?
No.
Oh, yesterday we talked about the pop and then we sang Row, Row, Row Your Boat. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. So today is just as I am. Remember, just as I am without one clue. That's the second one. Just as I am.
That's the question. Why especially the feet in the washing?
Because that's like, for a lot of reasons, but mostly that's your foundation. Yeah. And that was the custom to wash the dust of the road off here. Wash the dust of what has been and what might be. Wash the dust of the past travels. It's very poetic, isn't it? It's very beautiful. Very beautiful, those bowls. You can see how many times in your life it would be a good idea to maybe wash the dust of the past off your feet and see where you actually are. So first of all, you're not driven into the future by thirst. Secondly, you're not pulled into the past by dust. Isn't that lovely? And so then thirdly, what? It's the third bowl. Which is what? The feeling yourself now no longer an object who, or somebody who you're totally unaware of, either being in the, running to the future or in the past, but you feel the changing, shifting energy of what you are, which is the flowering energy of the present moment. So these offerings are actually experiences, opening yourself to experience each of these states is the offering bowl. These are the outer offerings. This is how you treat the world, if you're going to treat it with respect. Next one. Oh, what a face. Why does he make that face? You don't like that one.
No, it's just...
Take it off the shrine.
I just get a sense it's winds of energy. Is that correct?
It is winds of energy. But the flowers are the awareness of the energy patterns of what you are, no longer yourself as a fixed thing. And the incense is the energy, as it also works appropriately with the swirling energies that are outside. So, you know, the really interesting thing about incense smoke is it doesn't argue with the air. And it gets everywhere, you know.
Oh, that's beautiful. I like that.
It treats every circumstance appropriately. So there's the sweet smell of success. The inner energy is moving this way, and where's the outer energy moving? Okay, move it this way. Because if you're in friction all the time, you get real tense and stressed out, right? So if you're trying to make something move that won't move, maybe you just shouldn't do that. Maybe what you need to do is find a way to adapt around it somehow, or flow it with the energy that moves around it, or, you know? Play squash against it, I don't know. But like incense does, that's morality. That one is morality. Morality is treating everything appropriately. It's not morality. Not running into brick walls. Treating everything appropriately. So if someone is acting in a certain way, you're not surprised because you didn't expect them to be other than they are. It's very hard to be disappointed by people if you don't expect them to do anything except what they do. Wouldn't you say that's true? Mm-hmm. It's only when if you have had somebody come by who every fifth step they jump up and down and go, "Hi-ya!" And you think, okay, this time they're not going to. One. You thought you weren't going to do that this time. Well, you're not practicing incense.
Is it not having placing an expectation of somebody else in terms of what they should be or who they should be?
Well, let's just say not expecting them to be other than they are. This is something that I learned from doing this wonderful thing that the universe has allowed me to do called teaching. Mm-hmm. Is that one of the quick things you learn is you don't expect people to be anything except what they are. If they're liars, you enjoy the fact they're good liars. Or bad ones. If whatever kind they are. If they're obsessed with honesty, you enjoy how nitpicking they can be. You know? Like,
so if I'm a good liar, then I could the next day not be a good liar. So
Yeah.
But you look at pegged though as a good liar, though.
No, I don't. I have you pegged as whatever it is you're going to be right now.
Oh, that okay. That moment.
Yeah. No, you don't. You know. Example. Sometimes, you know, I have really excellent grapevine because I work with so many different people in different areas that I usually hear every story I hear, I usually hear at least four versions of it.
That's the truth.
Uh-huh. This is a great blessing because what I get to do is hear what that person wants to tell me. I no longer get confused with thinking I'm actually hearing what happened. I realize clearly that I'm hearing that person telling me what they want to tell me. And they're using this event to tell me that. So they are sharing themselves with me. So you treat things appropriately by expecting them to be what they are, rather than trying to make them what they're not. Or trying to make yourself happy with them. Thinking that you should be to blame because they were this or that or the other. No. Treating things appropriately has a certain degree of awareness in it. There's awareness of the inner flow of energy, awareness of the outer. It's like incense, smoke in the air. It goes according to law. There's nothing personal about it, in a certain way. It's very harmonious.
So would that be one of the reasons that natives use smoke a lot in their
stuff? I don't know. Mm. Is that a mirror? It's been a few lifetimes, eh? I'm in trouble with that. Check that out. Check my Jiwatindriya and see which lifetime I was stony, or, you know?
I just don't know.
But certainly different herbs and grasses and things have different... tobacco really does facilitate communication. And that's what tobacco is used for, prayer. It's the prayer herb. You use it, you burn it for carrying prayers. And it does do that. You know, so all of those things do have their use, but that's not what we're talking about here with this. This is slightly different. Mm. On top of that, you can burn a type of incense that's particularly helpful. In fact, I actually did bring the labels.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. I mean, these are two kinds of incense that I particularly like. So, maybe Snowline would be really good.
Thanks.
Yeah. But I'm just talking about the general principle of the bowl itself. Mm-hmm. Okay, so far? Next one is? Mm-hmm. So that one's pretty straightforward, isn't it? It's that really beginning to see things as they are, that kind of clarity. Like no longer caught by the illusions. Seeing things as they are starts with their life. Well, there's a real shift now in consciousness from the great thirst and the tanha to seeing things as they are. Now you're starting to be grounded, you know? You're starting to really actually have some power. Some spiritual power. Yeah. And use it. And so the next one is the perfume water. It's a drop of perfume in the ocean of consciousness. Changes all consciousness. It's basically the bodhisattva vow. Basically the realization that all beings, my mothers, limitless as the sky, are all destined to awaken. It's basically the recognition of the Buddha in all beings. Sometimes it's a little harder to see, but it's there, it's there. Some people are seeing how much they can cover Buddha nature with layers and layers of disguises and it still be Buddha nature. But it's there, you know. You know how to dig for it. It's there. So that's what that one is. That one is pointing to the great work of the Bodhisattva, the the sense of no longer now, with the clarity, you're no longer believing in this is good and that's evil, you know, and that's the division, the stuff you were talking about, you know, the difference between this person or that person and capital punishment. You know, that, when that light comes, where you recognize within yourself is the mass murderer, well, how do you do? Funny meeting you here, right, in my own back teeth, you know? And in yourself, the great saint, and the degrees of that operating. And so then therefore realizing that whether I'm murderer, whether I am saint, there is still in me that desire to come to clear understanding out of compassion for the sake of all beings. And there must also be, no one can be happy if anyone is suffering. However much someone may argue or deny, kill the bastards, all that stuff, you know, it's not true. So that's that bowl. So recognizing then that wherever you look, whatever you see, in the teaching they say all beings are the Buddha. All sounds are the divine sound. All places are divine. And that's that bowl, beginning to acknowledge the truth of that. Samsara, the realm of blind wandering, and nirvana, the realm of understanding, are not two different places. It's the mind that changes. And so then, from that point, comes the last bowl, which is food. Which is the beginning to discern, you know, what actions lead you to awakening and what actions don't. The real wisdom of beginning to understand cause and effect, which is what nourishes us all. Cause and effect. It is your actions that nourish you. Your actions will last much longer than this human body will last. This whole thing about life eats life, the seeds of karma will continue to ripen, it will continue to feed new births, new understandings, right? So at that point, that's the outer offerings. Now you understand something about the material world. At that point, you are no longer caught in the greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy that has made you before grasp at the outer realm. If you've done these offerings well. At this point, you recognize them as illusory in their value. A good marriage is wonderful for this life, but will he, she die at the same time I do and speak for me? You understand? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, how do you maintain a good marriage if one of you is dead? How do you do that? I mean, it's hard enough when you're both alive. I'm living in the same city. You know? But what about when your experience is totally other, when there's other realms, there's different separation? My mother has been a widow for 30 odd years. What's happened to her marriage? Or a good job, or a nice relationship with your children. Which lifetime? Which lifetime? Which children? Which mother? Which father? Which lifetime? So, even on, you know, on that scale, just on the scale of impermanence, how, and it's not saying trash the physical world, not at all. In fact, everything about these walls is talking about appropriateness, kindliness, treating things as they are. It isn't saying, go for it, get it, smash through, get through, you know, burst through your fears, make a big of it, you know. I mean, excuse me. I mean, that is not spiritual. Kindness is spiritual. Why smash through your fears so you can meet bigger fears? Why not find out what's under the fear? Maybe there's nothing there. What is there to smash through? That's just to make yourself into some kind of hero. I think so. What would be the value of smashing through fears? Becoming the great hero. You know, there's always going to be somebody else who's a little quicker on the draw. You all went to Westerns when you were kids. You know, you saw all that stuff. And the white hats and the black hats. And, you know.
Yeah, you know,
all that stuff. And always a bigger guy in the block and all that. You know, I mean, well, okay. It was all right when I was like 8, 9, 10. The Pep Choo chocolate bar, you know, and it used to stick to your mitts in the winter. And the movie was a quarter, and you know all that stuff. That was fun. But really, by the time the light has come on, you quit trying to win. And you're really interested in just understanding, living peacefully and with kindliness. You can't win. If you win, somebody loses. If somebody's lost, you're lost. You can't win. There's no winning. There's liberation. So by the time you get to the end of these bowls, you're seeing cause and effect. You're seeing every action has a result. You're starting to find life more trustworthy. You want to know, what is making? What is nourishing? What is nourishing? What is going to arise from the present? So now your attention has shifted from the physical world, which is the result of past causes, to the motivational world, which is the cause of the next arisings. So at this point, a bell rings. What is the bell? The bell is, this is the story of the bell. In the middle of the graveyard, which is to say, the result of the past is what is dead already. It can't be influenced. Right? Do you understand that? Result from past actions is dead in a certain way, in that it cannot be influenced. It cannot be influenced. If it is the result, the cause is in the past. So you could say everything that is present from this point of view is the graveyard. And when you realize that none of these things are going to bring you liberation, the outer world is not going to bring you liberation, and you let go of your aspiring to get, to give, to hope, to help, right? And you are treating things appropriately. You hear the bell ring. The bell is Guru Rinpoche sitting in the middle of the graveyard, ringing the bell. Ringing.
The bell tolls.
Yeah. And there is that bell ring. So you give these seven offerings, and then the bell rings. And it calls you to the ground of power, the inner offerings. This is where you meet Guru. Doesn't matter how many big guns you meet out there in the world. This is where you meet Guru. This is Guru. Is that good? That's a summary of what we did yesterday. Hey, not bad. It only took me half an hour. You know that I have been known to give the same class three times in a row, taking as long each time because I'm caught up in it. I'm quite pleased with that summary. It didn't take me 2 hours. There's hope. Now we go to the inner offerings. Do I know the hand symbols? There's lots of different hand symbols. Do I know the hand symbols for the outer offerings? You know, different people do different ones, and even in one school, you will find this sect does it this way and this sect does it that way within one school, right? Let alone the Shakyas do it this way, the Kagyus do it this way, the, like that, right? This way of doing it is often done by the Geluk school, and it's done by all the schools, but it's more a ritual way, but I really like it because it's basically what you're doing. This is going to be very familiar, eh? But we'll run through them again. What you're basically doing is you're using your hands almost to symbolize what it is you're offering. So it's a nice one to start with that you can do in your own privacy or your own shrine, right? And your water for drinking is like this. So you got your hands slightly cupped. not too much curled, the fingers. Yeah, slightly cupped. And that's like water for drinking. Right? Water for washing, you know when you wash your hands you do this, right? Well, you're going to do it like that, only you take your right hand and you slide the back of your right hand over the back of your left hand and then you slide it back. So, water for drinking, water for washing, slide the back of your right hand on the back of your left hand. Yeah, and then back. Well, let's just do it two or three times here. Water for drinking, water for washing, and back again. Flowers, poing! Facing each other with their palms together now. Yeah. Flower, there's petals going. Okay. Incense, believe it or not, because you're pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps, right? You're hanging on to your own thumbs so you won't stumble. You're holding on to your own thumbs. Well, there's a lot of reasons for that, but just for the moment, just do it that way. This is like, this is what, this is incense. And basically is that, you know, it's holding on to what is present.
Okay.
You know, that'll do, okay? Incense. And then light, there's the candle.
That's good.
And then scented water is, you know, the blessing of the bodhicitta, you know. And you feel a blessing coming out of your hands. Right? And then food is the same as water for drinking. Thumbs, yeah, not that far in, but for just a bit, yeah. So you go, Om Vajra Agyam Padyam Pushpe Rupe Aloke Gande Navidya Shabda. That's music. That's the bell. Aham Swaha. I offer them all. Vajra Agyam Padyam Pushpe Rupe Aloke Gande Navidya Shabda Om Swaha. Once more?
Yeah.
Vajra Agyam Padyam Pushpe Rupe Aloke Gande Navidya Shabda Om Swaha. There's lots of other ways you can do it. You can go Vajra Agyam Padyam Pushpe Rupe Aloke Gande Navidya Shabda Om Swaha. There's lots of ways. I used to know about five or six, but then I found I would be getting confused when I was in different schools. I'd be doing the wrong one, so I just gave it up. The important thing is knowing them as you offer them, as much as you're able. Do each one like that. Then the bell rings. Now I want to read you something. is from the Anguttara Nikaya, which is the middle length sayings. No, gradual sayings. The gradual sayings. There are 5 volumes of them in the Dipitaka. And this is from the 4, 173 in the Anguttara Nikaya. As far as the field of sixfold sense impressions extends, the field of the sixfold sense impressions are 5 senses and mind. So as far as that extends in your reality, so far extends, reaches the phenomenal world. Now, the translation of phenomenal here, the word is papancha sagati. And it doesn't exactly mean phenomenal world, although that's what it's referring to. It's referring to the outer realm. This is the outer object. The word papancha sagati means going, coming. It means existing in time. If you look up that word in the dictionary, the roots of it are what's in front of your feet and what is an obstacle. So it's your next step in time, and the obstacle is that sort of becoming what you're about to become, and the obstacle, because you get caught up in believing it. So there's a sense of what's in front of your feet is going to trip you. It's going to get you woven into the dream of believing that greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy are going to work if you try just once more. Just maybe just this time. And so continuously play with the sixfold sense field as if the outer world were going to satisfy you. So as far as the field of sixfold sense impression extends, so far reaches the phenomenal world of the papancha-sagati. As far as the papancha-sagati extends, so far as that fantasy, that obstacle, that what's in front of your feet, that possibility, all the phenomena extends in your reality, so far extends the sixfold sensible door field. That is to say, so long as there's a reality you believe in, your senses are going to find evidence to support it. Right? It works both ways. As far as your senses pick up things, it will reaffirm your false view. As long as your false view is ruling, your senses will pick up data to reinform it. Okay? As far as the field of sixfold sense impressions extends, so far reaches the phenomenal world, or the papancha-sagati. As far as the world of diffuseness, which is another way of translating papancha-sagati, because it's very diffuse when you try to actually pin it down to be satisfactory, or the phenomenal world, or the papancha-sagati, extends, so far extends the field of sixfold sense impressions. Through the complete fading away and cessation of the field of sixfold sense impression, the field of sixfold sense impression indicates both subject and object and the energy flow. So as long as there is a subject who believes an object and has a motive for believing that object, you have the sixfold sense field. When that fades away is when you no longer have the motive to grab things, to go shopping with your eyes, go shopping with your ears, go shopping with your mouth, go shopping with your touch, go shopping with the smell, go shopping with your mind. Do you understand me? We're continuously on a shopping trip. refurnishing reality. Continuously. We never get the bill for our charge checks. We think. We're continuously shopping. Huh? You got that? So when the through the complete fading away and cessation of the subject who's looking for the shopping spree, the desire to buy, subject looking for object with all the different motives. When you don't want to go shopping, there comes about the cessation and the coming to rest of the world of diffuseness. This is a conversation that Sariputra had. This is Sariputra speaking, not the Buddha. Sariputra had with this guy who was trying to understand what is reality, and this guy is coming along saying, okay, when there is enlightenment, does cause and effect, does all the world cease to exist? And Sariputra says, well, I couldn't really say that. And he says, well, when enlightenment occurs, does the phenomenal world not cease to exist? And Sariputra says, well, I couldn't really say that. Guy asked him about three different questions in the book, and Sariputra says to all of them, well, I couldn't really say that. And so the guy says, what could you say? And Sariputra says, this is what I could say.
Yeah. Well.
This is what I could say. As far as the field of sixfold sense impression extends, so far reaches the phenomenal world. Papanchasakati. As far as the world of diffuseness, which is the same thing as the phenomenal world, which is Papanchasakati, extends, so far extends the field of the sixfold sense impressions. They feed each other. Through the complete fading away and cessation of the field of sixfold sense impressions, there comes about the cessation and the coming to rest of Papanchasakati world. Of your shopping spree world, of your interior decorating world. Yeah? Another translation of Papanchasakati is a burden which causes delay or hindrance. We lose, we will. Okay, so when you hear Guru, the bell ringing in the graveyard, that bell becomes the first two waters gathered together. It is both bringing you out of craving for the. It means you have come out of craving for the future and you are no longer encumbered by the dust of the past. That bell is, you know, the sign that the consciousness has inherently accomplished the first two waters. The first two bowls become one, which is basically the carryover for the inner offering, the bell. Is basically the carryover of indicating that one is present with all desire, satisfied, and not caught by past. So, present and present with awareness, with interest, fresh. And then come the six offerings, which are the inner offerings. The six inner offerings are now offering the sense doors, the sixfold field of sense impressions, as aspects of awakened consciousness. So that the motive is no longer to go shopping, because the inner offerings are about motive, offering your motive. Isn't that beautiful? So I have this great puja for guru practice, which was given to me by one of my beloved teachers. And I really like the way they do the inner offerings, so I'll just read you a little bit of this. The inner offering. There they are. All the outer objects of the eyes, all the other objects that the eye picks, I see as the white goddess of form, Dorje Ma. So whatever it is, when you're doing the inner offerings, the bell represents yourself being present. It carries you over into the inner offerings. And then you say, whatever it is I am looking at, whatever is the object of sight, is actually the white goddess of form, Dorje Ma. Okay? And I should first tell you that when that bell rings, as I was saying to you last night, which I said in the class last night, you can feel yourself as more radiant, right? Remember we were talking about that last night? I said once you have given these seven offering bowls, you're no longer a fixed object, nor are you pinned on the world as object, right? Instead, you are a field of activity. Moving toward awakening, this particular talent of cause and effect, moving toward awakening. So as you down, now whatever you look at as deity energy, radiant energy, deity energy, whatever you look at, there is this. I and it. You see everything, all form as the dancing energy of the goddess of form. And the way that it's done for very often, and in this book in particular, there is myself as Yidam, a Hung in the heart. The Hung sends out energy, and it's the instant light, and the instant this light bathes the manifestations around me, all forms become the white goddess of form. Anything I see with the eyes becomes the white goddess of form. Dorje Ma. The instant the outer physical objects are touched by the rays of light that come from my heart, they lose their ordinary appearance and immediately transform into the white goddess of form, Dorje Ma. She is beautiful to look upon. In dancing position, wearing precious clothes. In her right hand, she's carrying a mirror which reflects the three realms of existence. So whatever realm, wherever the mind might travel, all form, no matter where it might be, mental form, physical form, all form, is Dorje Ma. Whatever is the object of God is actually Dorje Ma. She is the purified state of ignorance. And the Buddha Virochana, for those of you that have done work with the Dhyani Buddhas, the Buddha Virochana, in essence. By merely seeing the form of this goddess brings unconditional bliss to the eyes of the Buddha, to the eyes of the awakened consciousness, by what, when all form becomes, the goddess who in essence is not different from the wisdom of Virochana is no longer something for me to grasp, but has instead become the wisdom aspect called of awakening called Virochana. So beautiful, isn't it? It is so beautiful. What skill in transmuting samsara to path? You know? I love the elegance of this teaching. I think it's just so beautifully done. Even if you don't necessarily understand it, if you practice this way for a little while, you will understand it. By merely seeing the form of this goddess brings unconditional bliss to the eyes of the Buddhas in the 10 directions and has the quality to remove the 3 obscurations of sentient beings: greed, hatred, and delusion. I visualize the whole universe, above, below, and middle, as filled with these goddesses. Well, it is. All form is large and small. So you visualize like planets, you know, anywhere your mind can reach. As far as the Papanchasagati extends, so far extends Dorje Ma. And then I offer these goddesses a form innumerable in number to the eyes of the Lama, not different from Guru. To the eyes of Guru, which is the bell ringer, to the motive to come to awakening. I offer all that I see as a radiant goddess. To the path to awakening. No longer to my own safety. I'm just turning it around, taking the desire nature and turning it around for the sake of all beings. Very beautiful. And again, as with the 7 offering bowls, take one bowl and practice it for a day. So with the inner ones, you know, do a bit with hearing the bell of the guru ringing in the doorbell, in the graveyard. Pardon? Did somebody speak here? No. In the middle of the graveyard. The bell ringing. And then take, okay, every once in a while through the day, whatever you're looking at, let it become Dorje Ma. And offer her to the eyes of Guru. Just turn it around. And so that creates the mirror that is the transmuting ignorance into mirror-like wisdom. And then with all of them, the outer objects of the ears are offered as the blue goddess of sound. Whose name is Da Dorje Ma. D-H-A, Da Dorje Ma. She's blue. The moment the rays of light from the Hong in my heart reach all sounds, they become Da Dorje Ma, the blue goddess of sound. We touch the sounds in the innumerable lands of the 10 directions. And she is in dancing position. In her hands, she is carrying all the different kinds of musical instruments: flute, horn, bell, damaru, lute, and so on. There are 5 main sounds that arise at different times. And it's not unlikely, some of you, Kathy was telling me about this the other day, but some of you may have noticed sometimes when you go to sleep, if you're really tired of something, you may almost asleep and you hear a sound. Yeah, there are these sounds in the inner, and they happen especially when you're crossing a bridge in consciousness.
What about birds?
Birds?
There was, when I was sleeping and I'm dreaming and I know, well, sort of sleeping and and there's birds, and the birds are singing so loud, and I know that it's in the middle of the night, you know, and mm-hmm. they're so loud, they're like right inside the room here, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There are these sounds that come, and there are specific categories of them. There are hundreds of sounds. And you know why the Bardo Todo, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, is actually called the Book of Hearing? Because it's for those transition times, like in sleep. You know, that's when hearing gets really powerful. And these sounds, you know, very often when you hear one of those sounds, you'll either get angry or try to figure it out or be logical, you know?
Yeah.
But you're really close to seeing the goddess of sound, that Dorje Ma, when you hear those sounds. So if you can, just open your mind to that Dorje Ma at that time. The goddess Da Dorje Ma, blue in color. And offer that sound to the ears of the Guru, who is the path to Buddhahood. It's not different from Buddha.
Instead of trying to analyze it and trying to see if that's right or wrong or what's going on.
Those are lovely questions, but first accept it and make it an offering. And then after you've done that, then you can start saying, oh, do I hear it more in my right ear, my left ear? You know, what is it? Is it something I hear outside or inside, you know?
Okay.
Ask those questions. But first, try to identify it as Da Dorje Ma. Particularly sounds, you'll find that happens. I'm sure most of you have had that experience when you're asleep or almost asleep, and there'd be a sound, and you're not sure whether it's in the house or in yourself. So she's carrying all these different kinds of musical instruments. She's a purified state. Of hatred. And the Buddha Akshobhya, in essence. She has the quality to give unconditioned bliss to the ears of the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. As before, these goddesses fill the whole universe above, middle, and below. I offer all these goddesses a sound to the ears of Guru, the precious Buddha, who thus experiences the unconditional, non-dualistic bliss. This is the wisdom of Dharmadatta. And then smells, all the outer objects of the nose I offer as the yellow goddess of smell. Three Dorje Ma. D-R-I, Dri Dorje Ma. Instant, these rays of light fall, the rays of light from your heart, fall on all the smells in the innumerable lands of the Ten Directions. They immediately transform into the yellow goddess of smell. Three, it can be T-H-R-I too, but it's sort of like a combination between the two. It's like Dri Dorje Ma. She is in the dancing position. In her hand, she is carrying the pot containing precious scented water. A purified state of pride, she is the Buddha Ratna Sambhava, in essence. She has the quality of giving unconditional bliss to the nose of the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. I offer these goddesses to the nose of the Lama, the Guru, precious Buddha, who thus experiences non-dual, unconditioned bliss. This is the third of the transcendental knowledges. This is the wisdom of equality.
So it is like
when she wasn't writing; she was doodling in her margin. I made a mistake. What?
So it is like when you experience something that is really special like that, you sort of like give that pleasure of it away, or?
No, you're not giving the pleasure at all. What you're doing when you're experiencing anything, like when I experience looking at this wall, I look at that wall and then I stop thinking of it as a wall and I think of it as the object of the eyes. This is an object that my eyes are looking at. And in reality, it is none other than the dancing goddess who appears in all forms. Oh, there she is, there. Oh, God is there. Oh. All form, the dancing goddess of form.
So what trips us up a little bit is this naming all the time and giving it a fixed identity. Like, in a sense, if there was no names...
But, no, I wouldn't go that far. No, certainly no. It's very... And you see, Sariputra was talking about when this guy was asking him this. So if you didn't have names, or if you didn't, well, are there objects when the delusion disappears? Yeah. You know, then is that what the, and he says, well, I couldn't really say that. Yeah. No, but what does dissolve is the illusion. Okay. And so long as there is a subject desiring object, and it's there are that, there's the desire that gets, you know. You remember that sheet of paper I gave out about the four Maras? I don't know if you remember that. Did I give you that?
Four Maras?
You mean I missed a piece of paper with Edmonton? Mm-hmm. What? My number one paper? Giver, outer, placer?
I didn't receive.
The four Maras, and as far as the sixfold, okay. There are four Maras, or four demons, or four Maras. The first one is that cause one to create realities, to create the Papanchasagati, and then to get caught in believing it. And the first Mara is seeing an event and believing it to be real. Like right now, you are seeing all kinds of events in this room and you're not believing any of them to be real, you're believing them to be events. A breeze passes through the room, that's fine. A smell passes, that's fine. They just flow, they're fine. But if I, you know, walk over and say, God, that's a lovely necklace, I really think that you should give it to me. That becomes an event that's very real, and you get into this dilemma. Oh, should I give it to her? Shouldn't I? Oh, you know, right? And there's a lot of, there's suddenly, there is a subject and an object involved there, right? And then the second Mara, so that's the first Mara, seeing an event and believing it to be real. Second Mara is believing that the event is good or bad. Third Mara is, if you think it's good, trying to get more of it. Mm. If you think it's bad, trying to get away from it. No, starting to plan. Starting to plan. First time you taste something, it's good. Next time you don't taste it, you're already planning the next 20 times you're going to taste it. The third Mara is figuring out how to get it. And the fourth Mara is making rules so that all your friends obey. Lining up the world. Believing it, totally believing it. So now that sense of that event being real has become more real than anything else. And these four Maras happen very, very quickly. The four Maras, they're called the four Maras. You know the Vajra, oh, see, this is why I never get through a class once. I just happily sidetracked on this one. Watch me go, here I go, you ready? You know in the Vajrasattva work, in the Vajrasattva mantra, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Trinopatika Drito Megawa Sitokyo Megawa Sipokyo Megawa Anurakto Megawa Sarva Siddhim Prayatsa. bestow on me all powers. Sarva Kamasu, in all arisings, in all activities, in all experiences, Cha Mechitam, and my mind. Shri Hyam, rising and falling, and my mind rising and falling. Kuru, make it, Kuru, Hom, dissolve. Make it, come into the great dissolution, Hom. The four Maras, ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Ho, may I see it as it is. That's what, four Maras, the four blisses. The same. Four Maras, other side, four blisses. Those are the four Maras. See an event, believing it's real. Good or bad? Want more, don't want more. Hey, okay, now on Tuesdays and Thursdays we'll eat fresh, but on Friday and Saturday, and furthermore, didn't you bring me flowers? Whole rules and regulations. But of course this is real. Oh, we always do it that way. At which point, and the word delusion, do you know where it comes from? Of course you don't. I'll say no. Please me.
No.
Oh, thank you so much. I love being flattered. No, Cecily, tell us what it was. Those rhetorical pet. I mean, people who sit here and ask rhetorical questions, aren't they real pain? Do you know where the word delusion comes from? Delusion. D means, there are many different meanings. In this case, used with this word, it means to scorn. Delusion comes from ludere, means the play. The play. To scorn the play. To scorn the play is delusion. The four Maras are the four levels of delusion. First one, stopping the play by making an event, one event, out of the totality of play, real.
That's real.
Second delusion, deciding it's good or bad, right or wrong, delicious or... Third delusion. Third deepening of the delusion, being caught by Mara, figuring out how to get more or get away. Fourth delusion, fourth way of really tying big fat knots in the play, making it law, making, conforming, creating it for other people, getting everybody to salute, you know, creating countries, you're a foreigner, you're a dirty rotten. I'm a this, you're a that. Let's have a prison, put all them away, and then we can be good, and there's an invisible population we don't know about. All that stuff. Right? Right? You betcha. So this is like the total opposite. See an object, it isn't stopped. This isn't a wall. This is a dancing form that the eye picks up. It is the goddess. A form pretending to be a wall. I offer the dancing goddess a form wherever she appears, everywhere, in all time and all space, to the awakening mind. It's just turning the four Maras around. A very elegant way to do it. Shall we carry on, Chris? Gee, that was only a minor sidetrack. So we're on smell, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yellow goddess, Street Dorje Ma. And she has the scented water. And she's the wisdom of equality. Taste is the, all the outer objects of the tongue I offer as the red goddess of taste. Ro Dorje Ma. Row Arl. The moment the rays of the from the home of self as Yidam, the home, the moment the rays of light from the home in the heart fall on the six tastes. Well, you can just say on all the tastes, but here they name six. In other texts, I haven't seen six, but in this case they do. Sweet, sour, salty, astringent, hot, pungent. On the six tastes in the ten directions, they all transform into the red goddess of taste, Ro Dorje Mo. She collects all the tastes in the realms of the ten directions and transforms them into the five pleasures and the five nectars. These are contained in a kapala, a skull cup, a cup made out of the top of a skull, which she carries in her hand. She is the purified state of desire. And the Buddha Amitabha in essence. Her quality is she gives unconditional bliss to the tongues of the Buddhas in the ten directions. I offer all these goddesses of taste to the Guru, precious Buddha, who thus experiences the non-dual unconditional bliss. This is the fourth of the transcendental knowledges, the wisdom of discrimination. The five poisons become the five wisdoms. The five fleshes represent that, the five nectars. Skandhas is wisdom, rather than the skandhas as the seat of ignorance. So, okay, the last one is touch. The next one is touch. All the outer objects of the sense of feeling I offer as the green goddess of touch, Chag Dorje Ma, C-H-A-G. The moment the rays of light from the Hung in my heart, myself as Yidam, fall on all objects of touch in the realms of the ten directions, they immediately transform into Chag Dorje Ma. Green in color, in her hand she carries infinite pieces of different types of cloth, all different kinds of weavings, and furs, and every possible type of cloth. From out God realms, get a real good time if you're a weaver with this one. She is a purified state of jealousy in the Buddha Amoghasiddhi in essence. Amoghasiddhi, A-M-O-G-H-A-S-I-D-D-H-I, Amoghasiddhi. Her quality is in generating unconditional bliss in the bodies of the Buddhas of the Ten Directions, the skin particularly. These goddesses are filling the whole universe above, middle, and below. All of them are doing this. I offer these goddesses to the body or the skin of the Guru, precious Buddha, who experiences the non-dual unconditioned bliss. This is the fifth transcendental knowledge, the wisdom of accomplishment, or sometimes called the wisdom of activity. Here they call it accomplishment. And the last one. Thoughts are the object of the mind, and now in the instant the home rays of light from the heart of myself as Yidam fall on all the discursive thoughts in the lands of the ten directions. Now you know how many discursive thoughts there are just in your mind. Can you imagine what a good time this is going to be? uh, On the discursive thoughts in the lands of the ten directions, they immediately transform into the blue goddess of Dharmadhatu, Cho, C-H-U, Cho Dorje Ma. In dancing position, she carries in her hand a Cho Ying. Now, I don't know what a Cho Ying is. I think it's one of those yak tail things, but I have to check it out. So I just imagine all kinds of things. I wouldn't recommend you do any of them. You know, you could ask Lama Geshe, Geshe La, yeah, or you can wait for me to do a little research. But why don't you ask Geshe La? He'd be good to have. She is a purified state of subject-object duality. Purified state of subject-object duality. Isn't that lovely? Of the mind, the Buddha Vajradhara, in essence. She is the enlightened mind, which does not have a problem with samsara. Just by remembering her, this precious goddess creates unconditional bliss in the minds of the Buddhas. As with the previous five goddesses, she fills the whole universe in the ten directions and eradicates all obscuration just by transforming the six sense objects into the six goddesses and offering them to Guru. All obscuration for all beings in all time and all places is removed. I offer these goddesses to the Lama, precious Buddha, who thus experiences the non-dual, non-conditioned bliss. So that's the inner offerings. At this point, then, the secret offerings begin. And in this book, they give three different visualizations for the secret offerings. But in all three, now one again is Yidam energy, but now the Yidam is more like Chakrasamvara, that is to say, is like the master of the five elements now. It's a purified motive seated in the center of the elements, so manifesting all motive and all the elements manifesting for the sake of the awakening of all beings. No longer believing in a difference between self and other. So now this is the purification of intent, the inner. So now the secret offering comes. And the main way that I'm just going to tell you about the secret offering, again, the hung from the heart and the rays of light, all the consciousness that sees form, and the form that is the object of that, are not different than the Dhyani Buddha Akshobhya Mamaki in union, bliss union of inner and outer. Of the five senses, or you can do it as the five Dhyani Buddhas, as being the five aggregates. All form throughout the universe is the Dhyani Buddha. This, well, here, I'll just read this, what it says. I'm not sure that you're going to... Okay, shut up. Okay. Akshobhya, the five Dhyani Buddhas, Yabhyam. Akshobhya, Mamaki, Amitabha, Pandara, Vasini, Ratnasambhava, Buddha, Lokana, Lochani, Amoga, Siddhi, Samayatara, Varochana, Vajradhatishvara, Vari. I visualize these five Dhyani Buddhas, Yabhyam, are filling the whole universe in the ten directions and are experiencing that bliss which is inseparable from emptiness, the unconditioned, inborn bliss. This bliss arises both Both in, it arises first in a conditioned form. That is to say, the first aspect of the bliss arising is due to conditions. Having turned the mode of energy now toward awakening, that is the condition that allows the bliss to arise. So the first level of bliss that arises, arises from the condition of the inner offerings. Okay? The first bliss is recognizing that the Dhyani Buddhas are in union with the Abhyam, are not separate from the aggregates which exist in the entire realm of manifestation. Okay? What's the matter?
No, I was just listening, trying to figure out the whole Dhyani Buddhas. So.
You'll never be able to.
No.
Oh, yes, you will. And then from that experience, which is the result of the inner offerings, right? Do you understand why I'm saying it that way? There are two blisses that are going to arise immediately upon the secret offerings. The first bliss is conditioned by the inner offerings. Because of the activity of the inner offerings, of transmuting everything no longer as an object that you want to use to increase the papanchasagati, to increase the world of diffusion, to create obstacles that you're going to trip over. You're no longer regarding the outer world as that, but rather you're seeing it all as the dance of goddesses that you offer to the awakened consciousness for the sake of all beings. That causes a great sense of joyousness, union, and bliss with all creation. All creation becomes the five Dhyani Buddhas. That is called conditioned bliss because it arises based on the condition of yourself creating that offering of the inner offerings. Okay? Then immediately it triggers over to a totally opening of consciousness into transcendent understanding, which is called unconditioned bliss. So the secret offering is the offering of conditioned and unconditioned bliss.
Wouldn't the unconditioned bliss, though, is dependent on the conditioned one before? Or does it happen irregardless of anyone?
When the conditions die down, when the result, when the conditions are no longer active for the conditioned bliss, when the conditioned bliss arises based on the inner offerings, right? And then those inner offerings are no longer operating, they're finished. There is nothing left to happen. That is the cessation of activity. There is the experience of path, and then there is the attainment of path. When you walk into Safeway, are you already picking up the bologna? Hello?
No.
No kidding. Why not? Aren't you already in the door?
Not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing. One is the result of coming in the door, the other is being there.
So the unconditioned state, once that happens, there is no need anymore.
The unconditioned state, yeah. You are experiencing the unconditioned. Then you realize that the unconditioned is always there. And there may very well be cause that arises again, and you may very well begin to exist again. But that does not change the unconditioned, and you know the unconditioned is there. No. So it changes you. enormously. But the unconditioned is not changed by you. You are changed by the unconditioned when you have an experience of the unconditioned. You are changed. But you don't believe that the condition, the power of the conditioned is not so powerful, is not so great. When separation has an experience of unity, it changes separation much more than it changes unity. Huh? So, there's the outer, inner, and secret offerings. They're very beautiful, eh? No, you can't.
I'm
Xerox King.
Xerox, yeah.
But but Wayne,
yes.
I'm just finishing an essay I'm writing on Green Tara, and because in Tara, Tara is a mystical path. I'm calling it evoking the 21 doorways of Tara. And in it, I do a quick review of the outer, inner, and secret offerings, which is probably I've sort of honed it down a bit more than I'm describing. So I will be sending that. So it should be within 2 or 3 weeks. So. Pardon me?
To the house here or to...
Oh, sure, yeah. You can have copies.
Can we get a copy of the modern the 4 months too?
Mm-hmm.
Can we get a copy
of the 4 months? I'm sorry I didn't bring one. I'm surprised I didn't.
Could you use it in your talks, but we never have a written version.
Okay, well, it's just a one sheet of a thing. It's nothing. Yeah, for sure. I'll send you one. I've got the address. Oh, for goodness sake, it's 9:05. Do you have any questions?
Excuse my naivety in this, but towards the end, or when you get to the secret, are you not at that point just experiencing everything, or you're at the state of just emptiness?
Yeah, basically, but your emptiness with discrimination of the five winds, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Buddha nature can discriminate.
Yeah.
Which is why the one of taste has the five tastes, you know, the five nectars and the five meats in the bowl, so that even though it is all one, as is a rainbow, and there's the red band, and there's, you know, but there isn't, you know, there is no need to get rid of differentiation. There is cause and effect. It is dancing, these winds are blowing, this is turning, this is moving, this is very beautiful. There is no war, which is what's really interesting about that conversation that Sariputra had with that I gave that quote from, you know. I wouldn't say that. Does that mean that everything stops existing? I wouldn't say that. Well, does that mean that everything doesn't stop existing? No, I wouldn't say that. You know? There is still the dancing energy of cause and effect. Cause and effect continues. Dancing.
But it's not the clinging.
The Buddha said that there is the suffering, but no one suffering. There is the dissatisfactory condition now, but there is no one subject to it. It just is. What are you going to remove? The other thing you have to remove is your mind state that thinks you have to itch. Maybe you don't. Maybe you don't have to understand. Maybe you don't. Give yourself a break. Maybe you don't have to be right. Maybe having that object that you're trying for is obscuring the Dorje Ma, dancing Dharmadhatu, white goddess of form. Everywhere leading you to see the awakening. Now, you've heard me say this before, but I swear we've all sat together in front of that previous Buddha. What was his name? You know the one. Anyway, and you and I were sitting there, and I said, yeah, what do you think of the talk? And he said, it's pretty good, but, you know, I wonder where he gets his mustache drink. You know, and I was saying, yeah, and his robes, my dear, you know. And here we are. For our sins. I think it's funny too. I don't know. They're all saying, yeah, where does she get her mustache? Not that this is Buddha. Not that it isn't Buddha, you know, but. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
The skull, what is the skull cup, what does that represent?
Impermanence. And especially for most of us, that's real. That's like the real kingdom, eh? Just turn it upside down and use it for nourishment. Probably be a lot better if we all stood on our heads and thought with our feet. Yes.
I've always been curious, is there a logic behind the connection between something like smell, yellow, and the wisdom of the quality? In particular, the wisdom of the quality. Like,
yeah, the smell and the wisdom of the quality, much more yellow. To a certain degree, I mean, what you're hinting at with the color is more the elemental energy. I mean, basically you have five winds. So you've got the five winds here. And the five winds, for want of a better way to talk about them, are the five elements, which I am most satisfied with talking about them that way. And so you've heard me harp on this ad nauseum, and here it goes one more time. The center element is space, because we arise in space. Here, because there is space, there is form. So here we each are arising in space. Now you are in the middle of the mandala. Now you are in the middle of the magic circle. Now you are performing magic. What are the elements that you're performing it with? Here you are, arising in space. Okay, what is the desire that begins to blow? What is the energy of green? What is the energy of wind? What is it that is vibrating? What is it? What is the energy that's moving right now? Is it based on ignorance? Is it based on compassion? Is it based on that? Okay, and that energy vibrating, what is reflecting it? What is the watery reflection of it that you perceive, that you feel, that you sense? What is sticking to it? What is cohesing it? What is working it? What is shaping with it? Okay, and however that is shaping with it, what is your reaction to it? Are you going to freeze it? Or are you going to like it? Going to heat it up or cool it down? What's your reaction? You know, how is it going to run? How is it going to burn? Fast or slow? Is it blowing hot or cold? And then, and what is the result? What does that leave you with? What is it that is you're left with from that? What is it that it, that is making? What is that is materializing from that? And then the mandala rises again. Here we are, arising in space with the desire blowing. What is the desire with the water reflecting? What is the water with the fire burning? What is the fire with the earth? Extending time and space, oh, arising again, continuously.